This is a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, Vice President of Security Technology at Synopsys and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Synopsys and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.sigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 136th in a series of monthly interviews with security gurus, and I'm super pleased to have with me today Pavi Ramamurthy. Hi, Pavi.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
So Pavi Ramamurthy manages the security ecosystem at LinkedIn. The security ecosystem team holds much of the responsibility for software security at the firm, including training, awareness, bug herding, application vulnerability response, program management, and security positioning for partners and customers. Pavi has over 20 years of experience in software engineering and development, coupled with 10 years of hands-on security experience. Pavi's also worked in various capacities at VMware, Determina, Vitria Technologies, and 3Com. Pavi holds an MS in computer engineering from Santa Clara University, and she lives in Silicon Valley with her family. Thanks for joining us today.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So you spent many years in professional software development building stuff, products. So how long were you a developer?
Let's see, 3 years here, so about 15 years.
Wow.
Writing software development.
Doing hands-on software development. So back
doing hands-on development, yes.
Back in those days, what did you know about computer security?
Not very much, I would say, up until 12 years ago when I worked for Determina, which had the school technology called Memory Firewall. Mm-hmm. And I was charged in the task of writing a management application for that. So that was my first interaction with security.
I gotcha. And that was more about kind of making security work. What about software security? When did that first occur to you as a person in development?
So that was a shift in career when I joined VMware about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have a change in career, and the security team, which was at that point part of continuing development, and they had an SDL team. And I joined as a program manager for the SDL team, and that was my first introduction to security, thinking about software development, secure software development lifecycle, and you know, that's when I first met you as well. My first interaction was with you, in fact.
I do remember that, actually, at VMware. Yeah. So the point I'm trying to get across asking you these questions is there are a lot of developers that are extremely experienced and very good. And they could be good software security people, but often they don't really know much about software security in the beginning, although I think that's changing. So what do you think developers today should know about software security?
So definitely software security is evolving, even with not just from the security mindset of security professionals, but definitely from a software development point of view too, right? So I feel that it is definitely evolved, and more so that a lot of companies have a lot of security practices that are inbuilt. Gives them, like, you know, I think Sigital had an IDE solution built in that gives them the knowledge and the awareness and the tools that are needed to, as they develop, what kind of bugs are they looking for? Oh, this is a cross-site scripting. Oh, I just introduced a buffer overflow. So right. It's an awareness that is gradually given to them. And over a period of time, I think that they are more cognizant of such of secure coding practices that they inherently try and, you know, put that in their code.
Yeah, I think that's especially true from a coding perspective. Like, if your IDE is looking for particular bugs, it can give you a warning. Don't type that. That's bad. We taught you that last week. Mm-hmm. But there are other aspects of software security too, like security testing and risk analysis. And, you know, in terms of that stuff, How much do you think that developers should know versus there should be some other people in the organization, like the software security group or the security ecosystem, enhancing those practices? Like, how, I'm just trying to get a feel for how you think the balance should be.
It's a combination of all of what you said, right? And what is the end objective? The end objective is that given a period of time, the software developer is equipped with all the skills that he or she needs to do secure coding, testing, implementation, design at a certain point in time and given the right set of tools, right? So mm-hmm. How can we facilitate that? So every company has the agile model or the waterfall model, and they also have, most companies these days have a secure software development lifecycle that is embedded as part of the release management process, mm-hmm. right? So here at LinkedIn, we inject that security awareness at different points in the game, whether it's office hours, having a champions program where we hand select people to, enable that security posture in them. We have a software security group which consists of pen testers and, design reviewers mm-hmm. who will sit with them to explain security design principles to them. So it's awareness and training, and over a period of time, you're enabling the developer to think of those security concepts themselves, but it takes time.
Yeah, and I think it takes a while for organizations to adopt that culturally. I mean, you guys have been doing mm-hmm. it for a long time at LinkedIn. There are other people that are just starting. And so firms have, slightly different maturity in terms of getting these activities put into their SDLCs. And I use that with an S because everybody always thinks they have one, but they're really 40. So with regard to, being part of the software security group, you mentioned that. Do you think that non-development people who really don't know much about software can be effective members of the software security group?
Why not? I mean, absolutely, right? And it's how you take that awareness to them. To quote an example, we run the Security Champions program here at LinkedIn. We have successfully run it for a period of 2 years now. Mm-hmm. It started out to be mainly targeted at engineers, right? So it's easier for them to understand the secure development lifecycle. But mm-hmm. over the last two programs, and our programs run for 6 months, over the last two programs, we have included, non-technical people.
Oh,
so
cool.
So you focus on an area or a skill set that is comfortable to them, right? So if they are working with teams to, let's say, fix bugs and get good traction on bugs, whether it's code quality or security or whatnot, mm-hmm. we enable them with the right tools to be that evangelist that they can go and explain a security issue to, even though they are non-technical. And we tell them, hey, here are some courses, here are some tools, here is how we operate in the security group operates at LinkedIn, and it's all about enabling in my mind.
Yeah.
How do you enable, and it's more of a personalized program, which is it's targeted. It's no two programs in the Champions program that we run here is same, right? Every single program with every single champion is very unique and tailored and personalized to his or her area of expertise.
Yeah, so what you're saying is there's lots of stuff to do, and everybody can do something. So you don't just have to be a technical person.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
You don't need to be a software developer. You can be a salesperson, and I can give you the right security tools to be able to respond intelligently to a customer who's asking a security question.
I can
train you to respond to information security questionnaires that the customer sends to the sales contact. So anyone, and I can give the same kind of training to our procurement and strategic sourcing and our legal teams to give them the right set of materials, what to watch out for in contracts, what to watch out for in data protection agreements. So mm-hmm. the list is it's endless.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I kind of thought since you grew up as a software developer, you might have a bias towards software development.
No, I don't. I have LinkedIn to thank for that, because I actually do this in my everyday line of work here, mm-hmm. which is interact with sales, interact with marketing to put out security white papers, interact with procurement, legal, and strategic sourcing to review contracts, interact with our suppliers. So LinkedIn security program is very unique in that way, that we have a high touch point with almost all of the teams here.
Yeah, that's interesting. So tell me what got you interested in security when you decided to make that career transition. Why did you do that?
I wasn't really looking for it. It just happened that way. And I wasn't really looking to move into security, but the day I did, it was very interesting as to and rewarding as well when you see how much of a high impact you can have on multiple organizations. Throughout the company.
Right? Well, in some sense, you got started pretty early, because 10 years ago, you know, there were not really that many people in 2007 practicing software security every day.
No.
So that's probably seen.
I even remember the Gartner Magic Quadrant and all. I still remember that. And no, it was we were learning every day as we were evaluating new products. Like, are we looking at enterprise software?
Yeah.
It was more of a let's have a design review and a pen test, right?
Yep.
I mean, it was very focused on the SDLC and very product oriented. But the awareness, the training, the contracts, the sales, I mean, we are adding more and more organizations to within the company to the security portfolio, right? So there's just multiple verticals that you can target.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we've been making progress in the field of software security in the last 10 years?
Yes, and we are also discovering new issues, new threats as we go. But I do believe that we've had a lot of progress in writing automated tools, solutions to do most of this work, so you can really focus on the intrinsic, very nuanced security issues.
So one of the things that we've noticed in BCM8's results, mm-hmm. which we haven't released yet, they're getting released in the fall sometime, is real growth in the field in terms of lots more firms are getting involved, and some firms are just getting started. Lots of firms are getting started. But there's a little bit of slippage in the overall maturity of the approach because there are lots of noobs coming into the field. Do you see that, mm-hmm. too, in your interaction with, you know, your partners and your customers, that same phenomenon?
When you say noobs, you're talking about companies? You're talking about security professionals?
Well, both. I mean, people that are new to software security as professionals, and also companies that are just taking it on for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen much, because our organization, the house security organization here at LinkedIn, has very experienced people from the security industry who work here. But having said that, the Champions program is looking at kind of noobs, right?
Mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
people with not as much exposure to security, but who have a passion towards security.
Sure. I wasn't really thinking about your own employees. I was really thinking more about, you know, the employees of partners and the employees of companies that are your customers, and even the users of LinkedIn. There's some people that are just getting started in software security, and some of your partner firms might be teaching mm-hmm. them. Here's what we expect out of you. And it seems like as the field grows, there we get more of that. That's just what I'm thinking.
Yeah, and also it depends on really what is the organization's approach to security. how does he, I mean, is it enough if your product is secure? Is it enough if your third-party data is secure? But then how about a very simple thing as a contract? How about a simple thing as a breach notification? Who thinks about those things, right?
Right,
so
right.
How do you educate your partners? And then partners in turn would turn around and say, you know what, LinkedIn or some other company X gave me these set of data security requirements. I feel that they are great. I'm going to adopt that strategy, and in turn, I'm going to make that a requirement towards my suppliers or my customers, right? So it's kind of a ripple effect that trickles down. But there is a lot of knowledge that you can pull from various companies, at least here in the Bay Area, on how they, and it's a very inclusive community where in BSIM where we can talk about and exchange ideas. Like the office hours was something that a lot of companies showed interest in. I mean, how do we exchange ideas? How do we have an inclusive community to say, hey, this is something that I'm doing, and this is maybe something that you can consider doing, adopting as well?
Right? Yeah. I mean, I thought we might talk a little bit about office hours. So what role do kind of open office hours that the SSG holds play in LinkedIn's approach to training and to awareness among the whole population over there?
So our office hours, broadly speaking, you can think of it as product security office hours, which are office hours that we have a couple of times a week that's dedicated to any product team that has a specific question or a security on a security feature, or even they say that here's a new feature that I'm implementing. And the best thing about the product security office hours is we have representation from house security, we have representation from our legal department and trust and safety. So sharing the same message to all the audience, and it's consistent. So we make a determination on what is the security impact, if any, what needs to be done, is there a legal concern, that kind of stuff. So pretty straightforward, and we've been running this for over 3 years now, so teams are very well aware of the process, and we do regular socialization of our office hour process.
And are they using it? People come all the time to see what's up?
You won't believe it if I tell you that our office hours, our standard office hours, are always overbooked.
Yeah.
So we have SLAs. We have internal SLAs. Uh-huh. So we monitor our office hours, and very simply, Gary, it's a no-brainer, right? And because it's very simple, it's a calendar slot that they sign up for.
Yep.
So we have our own SLAs. We monitor it on a daily basis. We open up more office hours. No team at LinkedIn would have to wait more than 2 weeks for an office hour session. And if it is urgent, they send us a quick note and we do a one-off.
So that's really
cool. That's the product side of things.
That's a great way to interact, because it's sort of a pull model instead of a push model. You know, people are often talking about, you have to sit in training, you got to click through this stuff, or, you know, take this computer CBT. But being able to go and talk to a live expert is just way better than that.
Yeah, and most oftentimes it's a quick question that they immediately get an answer. So on the other hand, we have business engagement office hours, which is from a supplier side, right? Hey, a very simple example would be, I want to bring in a transportation system to transport employees from LinkedIn to the train station. I'm just giving you a very basic example. And then it comes to office hours, and we ask a question, so what kind of data do you need, right?
Yeah.
they say, oh, you'll have to badge in, right? So we use the employee badge kind of a thing. So, and then we ask them the question, what is the, you know, what data is it, the employee ID that is transferred? Do you need something to say that they work at LinkedIn? So it seems that, hey, it's just a transportation system, what's the big deal? But we are very, we are highly protective and very possessive of our data, and we are very careful as to what needs to be shared, what is the bare minimum that needs to be shared in order to get the solution
to work. You follow the principle of least privilege.
And from the business engagement office hours, we look at contracts, we look at suppliers, we look at all the data security clauses in the contracts. So It's a high touch point with a small team, and we have been very, very effective in having the office hours.
We'll be right back after this message. If you like what you're hearing on Silver Bullet, make sure to check out my other projects on GaryMcGraw.com. There you can find writings, videos, and even original music. So let me ask you about rapid development. So I know you guys do Agile and CI/CD over there. And I'm wondering what you think the impact has been of more rapid development methodologies on software security in general. And do you think that they can both live in the same, you know, environment and everything is fine and things are moving along well?
For the, I would say about 60-70% of it is working well, right? So when you are doing agile development, when you're doing rapid CI/CD, when do you, especially from a security perspective, when do you need to engage with security, right?
Yeah,
if you have all the tools in place, when you have all the automated testing and all you have to do is run those tools, get a security score, and you're good to go, and you just present that score saying, hey, look, I'm over 80%. Can I release?
Mm-hmm.
That would be the ideal situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's a tool that's written in-house, tailored to the proprietary framework.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, that's not the case. That is definitely not the case. So that's where I think something like office hours would be helpful, right? Hey, it's a quick question. I'm doing a quick feature. Can I release? Does it need any security review?
I have another question that harkens back to the beginning of our conversation, and that is, you know, we can build these tools and we can put them in the CI/CD that check the code, and we can even check our own proprietary frameworks, and that can be automated and it can be fairly quick, even though you got to fix the bugs.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens to design review and threat modeling? I mean, to me, that's the big challenge in CI/CD everywhere. It's like, what do we do about review of the design? Mm-hmm. Because we can't do that in an automated way that I've found yet.
We can't. I can go back and look at the number, but here we do a staggering number of design reviews and threat models in our rapid development framework.
I see.
And
so you just put a slot for that, but people have to do it.
Well, no, we have gates in place. So the way it works is if you want to release a feature, you need to file what we call a ramp ticket. And we are monitoring that ramp ticket on a daily basis. And that ramp ticket serves the purpose of informing the sales and marketing team when that feature is going to be ramped.
We just
injected ourselves into that. And we immediately go and look at the feature and we say, well, this is not approved for production until you've had a chance to come to security review.
Ah, I got it. So there's kind of a filter that you're applying in the process. That's cool. So I want to talk about security testing a little bit too. And I'm wondering, you know, if you're reviewing a new feature and you do some design review of that, how do you link that in with security testing? And do you think that QA can be led to do effective risk-based testing?
Eventually, yes. We still need to do some more work on that, on that front.
As a field, but absolutely.
Again, as a field, and even here, I think we are in the process of putting in some tools that QA can absolutely leverage and kind of sort of come to a scorecard that is acceptable, right? But to my earlier point about RAM tickets and all of that, so at LinkedIn, Every feature is pretty much like a story, right? You can trace it back all the way to a ramp ticket, which in turn is linked to an office hour, and which in turn is linked to a design review ticket. And the design review would specify if a pen test is required, in which case it links to a pen test ticket. And then when the pen test finds a bug, there is a bug that's filed.
Right.
So you started a bug. You can go all the way back to when that feature request was logged.
Interesting.
We have that system. So we have that kind of a breadcrumb that we have throughout. but still, there is a lot that can be. We also have some automated tools in place that will catch, you know, cross-site scripting issues and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel that there is no closure, or there is no point where we say, QA, you have all the tools that is needed for you to be self-sufficient in terms of QA security testing. There is still, we're still not there yet as an industry.
Yeah, I think that's right. Who do you think should do penetration testing? Like, in your view, who are the people best equipped to do that?
It's definitely a skilled pen testing team, whether it's in-house or external, because these are specialized skill sets. These are specialized tools that need to be installed. But I also feel that we can, and that's the Champions program, which gives them that kind of experience and the knowledge. Over a period of time, I most certainly believe that a security a QA team will be able to do security testing. Mm-hmm. But I'm still in the mentality of trust but verify. So. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy you did the QA testing and you did negative testing and you did all these security test cases and they've all passed, but I would like to verify at this point. But
right.
I'm sure that position will change as we get more and more mature and we add more use cases, more tools.
I hope so. I think you're pretty optimistic on that one. I've been waiting for that to happen for 15 years.
I know. we've been waiting for it. I've been waiting for it. But that's how you become scalable as a company.
Uh-huh.
That's how you increase the talent. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm a QA engineer who can not just do functional testing, but I can do security testing as well. That mm-hmm. my resume just became so attractive. Right? Yeah.
Yep. So the last question I have is completely different than all the technical stuff we've talked about. And it's a little bit personal in nature, I suppose. So you struck a really successful balance between having a career at a very high profile company mm-hmm. where you're doing lots of stuff and also raising kids who turned out to be, you know, really very nice young adults. So, how'd you do it?
I mean, as you know, my daughter goes to USC and my son is just about ready to go to Carnegie Mellon later in the fall.
Oh, congratulations on that. I hadn't heard that one yet.
You probably didn't know that, but thank you for that. It hasn't been easy, right? But now it's easy. For the last 6-7 years, it has been easy, but it wasn't easy all the time, right? But I can tell you, and I give this advice to all my women friends and colleagues, which is don't give up, because it's worth it. It's not just worth it from a career point of view. It's worth it from even a personal point of view, because when the kids see their parent being able to handle, you know, juggle multiple things in life, it gives them an enormous boost in confidence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you serve as a role model to the kids. And I've heard this firsthand from my kids. So I owe it to them, in fact, when they encourage me.
Oh, that's really
I in fact told my daughter that, hey, I'm doing this interview with Gary and I have no clue as to what questions he's going to ask me. And to that, she texts me back saying that, hey, you can lecture us with no prep at all. You do such a great job of that.
Just treat me like one of your kids. I don't know about that, Poppy.
I don't know about that either. But that definitely made me feel better. So.
But I mean, it's really interesting because it's such a, you know, it's such a conundrum as a professional woman. It seems like that's a very hard thing to do, and you've done an exceptionally good job of that.
It's also the support that you have, right? What support do you have from your colleagues, from your boss?
Gotcha.
That definitely goes a long way. But then there is also perseverance in my mind, and you know what? It's end of the day, it's really not rocket science. It's how you do effective time management. It's mm-hmm. how effective you are. You know, if you're at work and if you can get your work done, I'm sure everyone can get it done. I mean, there are always the exceptions when the kid falls sick and the husband and the wife look at each other saying, who's going to take the day off? Right?
Those days are over now. Now they're in college. You're just like, have some chicken soup and call us in, you know, next semester.
yeah, yeah,
Well, thanks for sharing that. So, last question. What's your favorite summer read? I've just been, one of my favorite this summer is a book called A Doubter's Almanac by this person, Adrian Kanin, which I really liked. But if you come across a book this summer that you recommend?
I actually have been reading, I'm a very avid book reader. My latest two books that I just finished over the weekend was The 20th Wife and Feast of Roses, both by an Indian author called Indu Sundaresan. It's about the emperors from India and one of the Muslim emperors from India and how they took this king, Jahangir, took the 20th wife and how the 20th wife showed immense confidence and courage in all the nation's affairs and had a seat at the legal table and all of that. So it's been very interesting.
Do you always read, you like to read history?
I read anything. You give me a comic book, I'll read a comic book. I will read anything you give me.
That's
including cookbooks, directories, I'll read anything.
I think that's a good answer. Well, thanks for your time, Poppy. This has been fun.
Thank you so much, Gary. It was a pleasure being here.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Synopsys and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Search Security. The May-June issue of IEEE S&P Magazine includes our interview with Kate Pierce, who has a very unique perspective on sexism in security. Check it out. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.sigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.